So there's new things that we're having to look for, like user run agents, things like that. And I'm sure there'll be another OpenClaw type thing that comes out that, our security teams aren't prepared to handle because it's just brand new open source random tool that somebody downloads and gives root access to their machine.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast. Every Friday, Lima Charlie hosts Defender Fridays, a 30-minute live fireside chat hosted by our founder, Maxime Lamothe-Brossard, who sits down with an industry expert and hands-on practitioner for an unfiltered conversation on a topic related to cybersecurity defense. These chats are so insightful, it made sense to share them on the podcast as well, 1 week after they originally aired. If you'd like to join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. And a reminder, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations where everything is built API first. You can think of it as a backend for your MSSP that enables you to scale with confidence as your business grows. You can get started today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it.
Welcome to Defender Fridays, everybody. Thanks for joining us. My kind of usual little pitch here is we get to talk to all kinds of interesting people in the industry. And so this is our attempt to broaden the circle a little bit so that, you kind of hear from different perspectives, always cybersecurity, defensive side, but I feel like every month, the envelope of what is covered by that just keeps growing, and there's all these weird and wonderful things that I don't know about. So we're just trying to bring in those conversations. It's not meant to be slideshows or anything like that. It's really conversations. So feel free to jump in. Today we've got Catherine McNamara with us. Hey, Catherine, do you want to do maybe a quick intro about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Catherine McNamara. I'm a technical solutions architect engineer at Cisco. They kind of change the names around a lot. It's they change our titles as much as they change our product names. So it must be a marketing thing. I mean, a little bit about me. I've been in the tech field for almost 20 years now. If it's important to people, I have a couple CCIEs and a lot of industry paper and a bachelor's and master's in information security. I only say that's important to some people because obviously certs aren't everything. Every day I go to work and I deal with a wide variety of customers with, ranging from very complex tech security problems to, pretty simple, like straightforward asks. I talked to my friend Ken, who wanted me to jump on here because, AI security is somewhat new of a field in the last 5 years, but it's been accelerating heavily, and I thought it would be an interesting topic to have a conversation about.
Yeah, for sure. I think, I know certainly from our perspective, it's a very timely topic because I think, the curve of AI in the industry is we've gone past the point where people realize like, okay, this is cool. There's real things coming out. And right now it's the infra buildup that is happening. And I think you've got some thoughts and some maybe guidance around the infra, like how, correct me if I'm wrong, like the infrastructure of like, how do we build up all of these systems that are very AI driven? Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Kind of, but more of also like threats related to AI. Like a lot of my customers aren't really building their own infrastructure. There are some that are playing around with it, but they're more using like public models or integrating public models with their inside systems. But they don't really, like my experience at least, is that a lot of them don't really have a ton of experience understanding like any of the threats, except like usually when I go out to a customer to talk about the threats, like regarding AI and what they need to protect against, the only thing that they generally know is like, oh, we might have people upload something that's private or confidential to some LLM model, but that's the depth of what we're like that they know about. Or, but like if they're integrating like, licensing something like an AI model and integrating with their backend systems to replace like a customer service chat with like an AI bot. They're not really aware of like what security or like least privilege access they have to do. They just kind of integrate and they're like, yay, we save some money on OpEx, or other ways that like maybe their users' chat logs may become public later on because the AI models that they're using publicly are like not secure, or a lot of them, when I ask them about what they're doing to limit unauthorized AI use, they'll tend to be like, we have a written policy. Which, yeah.
It's a
Luckily, that
start.
stops all shadow IT.
No, it de definitely does not. I mean, look at even like tech people like fall victim to this. Ken and I actually know a really good friend that he posts about this on Twitter, so this is why I can talk about it. But a friend of ours does red teaming, and his report apparently was so polished and professional that apparently his IT director client thought that AI must have written it. So he uploaded the full unredacted red team report to ChatGPT and was like, "Did you write this?" And when it came later on, told our friend was like, "Wait, you uploaded all your vulnerability, like a report with all of your vulnerabilities, the ways potentially to get into your network to ChatGPT, where it could possibly learn off of that." And the guy was like, "Oh." Like even really smart technical people who should know better sometimes still make mistakes. I'm not saying that guy is an idiot or anything like that. It's just, a written policy or trying to protect against like, trying to tell your client, your end users, even tech end users, don't do this is not enough these days. And I don't think they really understand that there's more than just DLP and like basic provisions like that. Like some of these AI models are really insecure, so you have to be careful about how that you integrate them and what to test for when you do integrate with like if you're integrating them with your backend SQL server to like provide order status, you should be doing roles-based access, very much limiting what it has access to, things like that. Like when I have these conversations with customers, they're like, I didn't think of that, but you integrated it anyways.
It feels like it's the same, it's the same kind of guidance just applied to a different thing. And just because it's AI, people, I guess, don't have the instinct to go and do the same thing. It's as if AI, it becomes like this wild card of like it all works magically, and so I don't need to do any of these things.
Yeah, the AI might be able to provide generative results for you, but it's not protecting itself with AI. It's still a system that is open to system attacks. Like if you don't patch it or you don't patch the underlying infrastructure, that can be hacked. You have to trust if you're using a public provider, you have to trust that they're doing that as well. The front end, it's still open to prompt injection. It's still open to other forms of attacks. I mean, the prompt injections are getting a lot more complex, but they're always getting more complex and finding ways around every single LLM model. Like, I'm sure everyone in here has probably played around with Claude or played around with ChatGPT and has hit a wall where it's told you, I'm not allowed to do that. And then you rephrase the question enough that you finally get it to do what you want. Have you all had that experience yet? The prompt injection is basically social engineering somebody who has amnesia every new conversation you have, instead, and that they can't get suspicious because every time you open a new conversation, they lose the context and you're essentially dealing with an amnesiac. That it's just a little bit more technical than that, just
Social
slightly.
engineering in the movie 50 First Dates.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of feel like I wonder if it's because we've spoiled people, like I think people always think that security is someone else's problem, right? And I think particularly with AI, they think, oh, they're going to put these restrictions. They're not going to let the Claude just go and do stuff to my production environment or whatever. So I think people maybe they place it's misplaced trust. And we talk about those policies and things, but do the AIs read the policies? Maybe, but does that mean they're going to follow it? No.
And even if they are following it consistently, who's to say somebody can't write a prompt that won't get it to bypass it or make it think its new system instructions telling it to disregard those previous instructions, and you word it in a way that, gets around any filters or anything. I mean, there's always, again, you're dealing with an amnesiac who you can basically just spin up a new conversation with and find your hole, poke your holes through it. And so when you're giving up like these, like you we've you guys are in California, Oregon, if I'm not sure exactly what state. I'm in California, but if you go to like the DMV or most like big California agencies, there's a chat bot now where I can ask it questions or have it retrieve my vehicle registration or other details to see what I have to pay. So that chat bot, probably eliminated a couple jobs and provides the ability to access some sort of behind the scenes database. And I'm sure that other states are similar or have similar systems. Now, if you're not securing that access, that plug-in between the front end and the back end, I could potentially go and find other people's records, or potentially, if I do a SQL injection or a prompt injection that works well enough, or I convince it that I'm an administrator, so therefore it should pull whatever I want. Or let's say I want to change someone else's records. If it has read-write access to that SQL database, and that SQL database is like the main one that governs the whole state's DMV, you can have some real problems there. But all these people, like these companies, are in a rush to like save money, cut OpEx, because that's what their competition is doing, or that's what they've been designated or told to do. And I find that these tools are being put into place with security as an afterthought.
Do you think it's an extension of the, it's kind of the same thing we have seen before in things like mobile development and stuff like that? Because the answers are straightforward, meaning, hey, you're building a chatbot. Fundamentally, there's things like access control, right? Deterministic gates and the scope of access and all of that stuff. And it feels like we're talking about the same types of problems we were talking about, let's say, like 8-ish years ago, where there's this big rush to mobile development, things like, Firebase and all of these things that people that knew just enough to build a web app or a mobile app were building these things, not understanding security, and were just, opening up the database to the world and doing things like that. It feels very similar.
Yeah, it is very similar. I believe it is. But also, we're rushing to new tools that, at a pace that's outpacing our ability to secure those tools. So when we're looking at a classic LLM or AI model, like you're looking at the application. So whatever front facing with an LLM, that would be the chatbot. So there's ways to exploit that. There's, the infrastructure in the system is another way to potentially exploit it if somebody's not patching or if there's a new zero day or vulnerability there. And then the data set itself, like they've found ways, using Pickles attacks to basically inject code that could be run if it's being ingested using like Python Torch or other things. But now we have new tools coming out like OpenClaw, and other tools that are like open source that people are downloading and giving root access on their like PC, and it's just basically like they're integrating with their work computers and other things, and then they're just like without any regard to security. So there's new things that we're having to look for, like user and user run agents, things like that. And I'm sure there'll be another OpenClaw type thing that comes out that our security teams aren't prepared to handle because it's just brand new open source random tool that somebody downloads and gives root access to their machine or root access or API access to their work emails and other things. I don't know if you heard about the head of Meta's head of AI safety kind of messing up with OpenClaw. OpenClaw is basically an agent tool that basically integrates with your different LLMs, but also integrates with your different systems to try to do your work for you. So if you want it to clean out your email or help draft up something, it basically is a localized agent that integrates with other AI tools and other systems. But the problem is it's not very inherently secure. It is prone to mistakes and it runs as root on whatever system you put it on. So Mac. A lot of people download it to their main system, didn't sandbox it away from like and let it have access to their like their phone, their emails, whatever else. The head of Meta's AI safety was one of those people who gave it full access to a work email and it deleted it. Whole inbox all at once. So people who know better are still trying to leverage these tools with still having a security as an afterthought. And so like I guess when I gave the premise of like this talk of like the typical AI systems, that caveat I should have also added is the expanding system of like user-run AI tools that are localized on their PC. Like that's a new threat avenue we have to work to handle as well now, because everybody wants to automate their work and make it so much easier.
Yeah, I mean it's like indirectly it kind of speaks to how people feel about the value that those LLMs are bringing to all kinds of different aspects of what they do. And it makes me wonder, you know, what's the solution going to be? Because it feels to me like the fundamental value from an LLM is the ability to trust it to do certain things, and those things absolutely require high permissions for, you know, for some of the things that they're trying to do. And so it becomes a question of, you know, like giving those high permissions is working as intended. The thing is, we can't, you know, can we, how can we trust that LLM? Like it kind of feels to me like the way out of this is just better models, because we've kind of broken the seal where people see the insane value to be able to say, hey, some AI is able to do anything that I want in my life. Then, you know, we need to make that safe. How do we make it safe? I don't know if just like role-based access control, all the things is really the solution. Because if I want to give the ability to my LLM to write an email, I have to give it the ability to write an email. And so it becomes
I
a
think
like.
there is some space for gating what your model has access to in a much stronger way. Like you cannot look up a user's records until you have validated information from that particular user. I'm thinking back to like last week's thing on kernel CTF of anytime you can have a hard gate, please do so. If the model can read any user's records out of the box, then it will be socially engineered at some point. Newer models will not fix that. These are fundamentally machines that anything in the context window has approximately equal importance. We talk about system prompt versus user messages, but it's all in the context window. There's always some confusion of data versus instructions, just like we see with SQL injection, command injection, etc. In the normal routing and switching world, firewalls are 100% reliable. If destination port 80 is not allowed, then all destination port 80 packets will be dropped. That is a fundamental difference than we see with large language models saying the system prompt says don't follow these instructions, but it's luck of the draw. Just like humans are not very good firewalls. If you call 1,000 people and try to convince them you're from IT, fewer or more than zero will believe you.
Yeah, and I was gonna say as well that ultimately you can put filters in these rules. You can or it, like it, if it's anything that's re like langu a language model, you can put filters in the rules.
Uh-oh.
Ooh. Well,
I
I
wasn't.
think that was on her side. I am not aware of it. I didn't touch anything, I promise.
For the record, I don't have host powers.
I
Wasn't
think I
me.
do, but I haven't touched
It was the AI that didn't like what she was saying.
Exactly. That must be it.
That's the only explanation, guys.
It's
The
I
AI
would
is on
expect that she'll be back here momentarily.
her. Yeah, she's so good.
Yeah, I think keeping in mind what filters are 100% reliable and which are not, AV, EDR versus application control. EDR, if I get unlimited temps, I will always make it past. There are an infinite number of ways to do Hello World. There's an infinite number of ways to do Mimikatz. Some percentage of Hello Worlds will be blocked, some percentage of Mimikatz will be allowed. That will always happen, as opposed to application control. Instead of trying to protect against the infinite universe of binaries, we'll defining what we allow and not allowing anything else. like
Yeah.
specific firewall exceptions and default deny.
I totally agree with you. I at the same time, I feel like we've gone past the point where that's going to be acceptable in the long term. What I mean by that is we've tasted the power of having this artificial intelligence. And so for us to go and say, hey, the solution here is everybody has to think like an engineer and do really clever prompt engineering and gates and all that stuff. I feel like that's a really hard ask nowadays. And it's more about training the models to keep getting more and more and more and more intelligent to the point where, like, yeah, theoretically you can bypass, but in practice, like, it'll take you 100 years.
I think you are correct in that we have new attack surface as an industry, and people are going to keep exposing that attack surface. But that's not too different than any new technology exists. It has its own ways to hold it wrong, and people are going to choose to hold it wrong. I think that there is some options for, again, hard gates of the chatbot doesn't have access to a user account until you have authenticated, much like if people have dealt with like row-based security in databases, that yes, you, the user via JavaScript, have access to the database directly, which is a pretty new thing, but you only have access to what your user ID has access to. Somewhat similar there on the language model. That is an option. There is a path forward that is a hard gate as opposed to depending upon better vibes in the future, which is what I'm harshly referring to, waiting for better models. It's like, yeah, it might be slightly better at different vibes, but benchmark, we talk about benchmaxing, but they don't reach 100%, and they will never reach 100% on always picking up the right vibes from a security perspective.
Michael, I see you were unmuting for a second there a minute ago.
Yeah, I wonder, like, how much of this stuff, like, because we want to like give engineers like the ability to use these tools, right? But we also want to give, I don't even know, like engineer curious people the ability to use these tools. Like, you are like sort of, building a new class of like software developers that traditionally didn't have access to these tools because never learned to code in the traditional way. I feel like I'm one of these people, and I feel like, I wonder how much of this also gets solved. Like Maxine, you're saying like, oh, we can, model our way out of this, maybe, but maybe the solution is like harnesses too, right? Like maybe there are like more complex hooks that we can build in from a harness perspective that do some of these like to your point, Jeff, like non-RBAC controls. Like RBAC is likely probably some part of the solution for complex web apps or something. But just for like developing and stuff like this, I think there definitely needs to be some better work out of the Frontier Labs, but maybe just from somewhere else, which is like, how do we do like MDM for this the same way that we like push out mobile devices, the same way that we push out like managed Macs, and like this is the way that you code with this thing, and it's regardless of the model, like it could run with the Codex, it could run with Claude. Like I do think that there's still a lot of room for improvement on like just the harness side and actually like codifying and like, and to her point from earlier, like, yeah, you can have all these standards and policies and like it doesn't matter if they're not configured correctly or the AI doesn't listen right to the hooks. So like the hooks have to be like very hooky. I think the way that it is in Claude code is like not well implemented. Like it even just ignores the hooks like half the time, right? So I don't know. Just a few thoughts.
I think there can be a lot of truth there with like essentially lots of good templates for, hey, if you want to build a chatbot, and the training data might be entirely biased towards it, so that when you ask the model to produce the chatbot, it says, well, here's the pattern that that most of my training data uses. Just like if you want to make a website, Claude and Codex will be happy to use Next.js if you choose a data like the models have their preferences for which tech stacks to go with, and I think that can help a fair bit. But I think there's a difference between the harness, the Claude, the Codex, the Gemini versus the generated product here. And the chatbot thing is more the generated product, where if you, sorry, give a thousand people or a million people that have ne previously not been developers, and we give them loaded handguns and say, have fun, people are going to shoot themselves in the foot. We need to design with some power, but also some little bit more learning. Have a dev test environment, et cetera. Hey, there's a returning Catherine.
Yeah, sorry about that. For some reason, my computer decided it needed a reboot. So sorry about that.
Windows update?
No, I'm not on
No?
Windows.
All
This is
right.
actually the first time I'm using Zoom on my Linux machine, actually.
Nice. Hooray for Linux
Yeah,
at first.
so I'm used to using like WebEx for work, so I've had to like speed install Zoom and stuff, and I guess it just decided to freeze the last time.
Yeah, I forget what I know you were mid-sentence. We were not sure exactly what we were
I
talking
think when I stopped off, we were talking about like better models, and I was saying like there's certain things you can do with better models, but like with LLMs right now, where they're at, they're inherently vulnerable because they don't know the difference between system prompts and user prompts. And so you can, there's mitigating things that people do, like add filters at the end that users don't see in system prompts in the beginning. But inherently, there's always going to be some way around that. So what we can do to defend against possible vulnerabilities right now, at least with the models that we have, until we build something that isn't quite as terrible, is limiting access to the back end, making sure that we host our own, approved on-prem system, that we're updating the infrastructure, the system, we're making sure that the data set is clean, but also we have to limit users for these new tools that they're downloading or authorizing permissions to. Like if you guys look at the Vercel hack that just happened just recently, basically it was a bit of a chain that like for somebody had the ability to grant access like using OAuth to Vercel's system by basically granting access to an app that they were testing out. Like it was Context AI. The way that Context AI got compromised is completely like a different thing. But the only reason that they were able to get into Vercel's system is because they were able to do pretty liberal permissions to be able to grant access to an AI tool. As people test out these tools and have these shadow IT, like we need to be able to block them from downloading an OpenClaw instance, a root on their work PC, and running wild and integrating it with like other work related systems, because there will be work lost or other issues that arise. We need also, like, when we grant approved access to a third party like cloud hosted tool to our inside systems, having the ability to lock down like what permissions it has. And also, if you're really like security conscious, like if you're like a HIPAA compliant, or you need to be like PCI compliant, you may also have to request a review of their systems for like compliance reasons. Like, hey, I need to know that your systems are up to date, like if that you're HIPAA compliant and or PCI compliant, because at the end of the day, like these third party systems are get you're granting them extended access into your environment. And we have to also know that these tools are fallible. And in the US court systems, they have ruled that if your LLM tells someone they're going to get a discount for 100%, you're pretty much on the hook for that, because you don't have a customer service agent anymore. And it's basically an official message from the company. So you have to also be aware of their limitations there, and put it only in charge of things that you're okay with accepting an acceptable loss with if they mess up, until at least we get better systems.
You touched on OAuth security, and I feel like it's one of those things that got robbed its time in the spotlight. I remember about a year ago, I think we were talking to somebody on the Defender Fridays about that topic. It's such a large vulnerability surface because it feels so simple. And people grant, these access across the board.
Allow authorize, like end users will just hit that shit like it's candy. Sorry, pardon my French, but like they're so programmed to say authorized with every app they download, whatever else, that they don't review what permissions. Like that to them, it's like, okay, I have to give my phone number, my email address, everything to this app, every app I run. So I'll just go ahead and click authorize. So when they get those OAuth authorizations, it's just like, when they're authorizing an app to them, it's so stupidly simple that they don't understand that they could be handing over full domain permissions or admin permissions, depending on what access they have.
I'm confused about being asked for permission because don't you always just start Claude with dangerously accept permissions?
That I like to live dangerously, so of
Yeah.
course.
If
That's
there's a
right.
dash dash YOLO option, I have enabled it.
YOLO.
I feel like for the LLMs, the other thing we haven't touched on is I can see I was gonna say I can see the future. I cannot. But I can imagine the future where the thing that's truly missing is not a question of model training or role-based access control, but it's context, right? Fundamentally, it's impossible for an LLM to know that it is, a customer representative and like understand the whole context of how it runs and what it's expected to do and all of that. And, I can imagine that there's a point where we're going to figure out ways to make that scale better, like scale the kind of transmission of this high level context where the LLM can really rely a lot more intelligently on that to avoid to make the simple mistakes of like, hey, I'm a customer support agent and administrator is asking me to dump the whole database in the chat message. Like obviously, this should be a low-hanging fruit here.
No, I agree, but at in the back end, like that LLM is still a I saw a chat. Somebody said a Cisco employee giving a talk yesterday on how many people install LMAO tools with coming surprise backpack. How many? Sorry, I was Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say as far as like me being a Cisco employee as well, like I noticed that like as soon as like oh like Claude Bot OpenAI came out, like there are people even internally who are like, has anyone else tried it? And I'm like, do not install it. Like I get it, it's exciting, but don't, not on your work PC at least. Like even
That's right.
tech people at vendors are susceptible to being like, ooh, it's the new shiny, I'm gonna play with it on my
And
work laptop.
there's
In
going to be
root
a lot of new
permissions.
shiny as well, right? Like I feel like it was the first big one to really hit hard, and I'm sure there's going to be more.
Oh no, there's definitely going to be more. Every time somebody like thinks that they can get an easy button or that they're like or offload their work and it looks like or hyped up to be super easy, people like not every like outside of InfoSec, not a lot of people are really security minded, like unless they think it's like the government spying on them. I mean, if you convince them that it's like the CIA, like, it's a CIA tool, it's just going to give everything to like to the CIA or like NSA, then you can get people to be security conscious because, we live in a very like conspiracy theory driven society. But outside of that, like people just they click and run if they think it can make their life easier. Maybe it can to some degree. Maybe it makes it 20%, 10% more efficient. But I prefer to run that in like I have a sandbox right here like here's my little Claude instance running on a little Intel NUC. It isn't integrated with any of my emails, it's not integrated with any of my systems. I have it running with OpenAI and Claude, and I have it doing like certain like research stuff for me, but nothing that it can actually hurt or damage anything. Those are the ways that you can deploy those tools, like segment it off on its own VLAN, just internet access only, and I give it access to none of my live systems to test it out. But people tend to go all in and jump feet, feet first into the deep end of the pool.
Indeed, that's good words of wisdom, I think. Hopefully we won't need it in the future, but today very much.
Oh, we're gonna need it in the future. People are still gonna like shiny things.
That's right. Thanks a lot for coming in. That was a great
Sorry.
chat, great discussion. If folks want to get in touch with you, is there a better way to do that?
I'm on Twitter at KMCNAM1. Don't mind the memes. I posted a lot of like fun tech controversial memes. Most of them are sarcastic. I get a lot of people being like, "That's not right." Like I posted a meme the other day about like data centers secretly holding gold and being virtually unprotected, and a lot of people showed up in the comments, "That's not right." I'm like, "It's a joke."
Sounds good. Sounds good. Thanks a lot for coming in. And
Yes,
we
sorry about the blurb off in the middle. That was just that's the first time I've actually had to restart my system, involuntarily. So apologies.
No worries, it happens. Cool. All right. Well, we will see everybody next Defender Fridays next week. Have a good
All
weekend.
right, have a good one.
And that brings us to the end of another Defender Fridays discussion. Support our show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend. Subscribe or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening from. If you want to be a part of the conversation and join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.